भुजदंड सपातुवः क्रीडा कंदूकतम येन नीतो गोवर्धन गिरिः। मे दैट लेफ्ट हैंड ऑफ लॉर्ड कृष्णा, वामः, वामः मीन्स लेफ्ट, मे दैट लेफ्ट हैंड ऑफ कृष्णा भुजदंडः सपातुवः, पातु मीन्स टू प्रोटेक्ट, that left hand of Krishna which lifted the Govardhan hill like a toy, krida kandukatam yena, protect you. So we should learn to take complete shelter of Krishna, understand him as our protector. He is not only our protector, but he is also our maintainer, our guardian. In this song, Tumi Sarveshwareshwara, Brajendra Kumar, I will read the translation. Bhaktivinod Thakur says, O youthful son of the king of Vraja, you are lord of all lords. According to your will, creation and destruction take place in the universe. According to your will, Brahma creates, and according to your will, Lord Vishnu maintains. According to your will, Lord Shiva destroys, and according to your will, Maya constructs the prison house of this world. According to your will, the living beings take birth and die, and according to your will, they meet with prosperity and ruin, happiness and sorrow. The tiny soul bound up by Maya vainly struggles in the fetters of worldly desire. Without your sanction, he is unable to do anything. You are my only protector and maintainer. Except for your lotus feet, there is no other hope for me. No longer confident of my own strength and endeavor, I have become solely dependent on your will. Bhakti Vinod is most poor, and his pride has been leveled. Now, in accordance with your will, he lives and dies. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning in this bhajan that actually it is only by the will of the Lord that everything is happening. All the great demigods in the universe, in every universe, are performing their prescribed duties. Bhishasmad vatah pavate bhisho deti suryah bhishasmad agnischandrascha mrityurdhavati panchamah. In this verse in the scriptures it is mentioned that it is only out of fear of the Supreme Lord that the wind blows, vatah pavate. Here also Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the same thing. Bhisho deti suryaha, that the sun shines in fear of the Lord. The fire also blazes because of fear of the Supreme Lord, and so does the moon give moonlight. And death chases everyone out of fear of the Supreme Lord. In other words, it is because the Supreme Lord desires it that all these things are going on under his superintendence and supreme control. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is playing that not only are you my real protector, but you are also my real maintainer. Generally, we think in terms of our own efforts, intelligence, degrees, jobs, family as being our maintainers and protectors. But actually, who is maintaining? Are we maintaining ourselves because of our own efforts? Is that the exclusive reason for our maintenance? Have you ever seen an elephant going to university, getting a degree, and taking a job? Probably not. Have you ever seen an ant going to university, taking a job, working for a livelihood? Have you ever seen elephants or tigers or ants opening shops and businesses for their livelihood? So who is maintaining them? The ant is eating hundreds of tons of food every day. And the ant is eating only a few grains every day. But both are being taken care of and maintained. So who is maintaining them? In the early days of communism in Russia, soon after the king of Russia was overthrown by Lenin and his people, they were trying to popularize the communist party and the communist ideology amongst the masses and the farmers in Russia. The people in Russia were very religious. So they went there and tried to break their faith in God and make them understand that there is no God and actually it is the Communist Party that is providing you everything. There was a famine going on. So the Communist Party workers, they went to the farmers and told them that you're going to your church every day or every Sunday, but do you think it is God who's providing you your bread? Why has he not provided you bread all these days? There is such a famine going on here. You just wait. You go and ask your church, go and ask your God today for bread, and we will wait. And tell us if he provides or not. So after 2 days, the Communist Party people came back with a truck full of bread. And they asked the farmers, so, did you ask your God for bread? He said, yes. And did he give you any bread? He says, no. Then, what did we tell you? Better to have faith in the Communist Party than in God. So here, we are the Communist Party and we have come and here is bread, take. So who is maintaining you? The Communist Party or God? So they gave them bread. So do you see the fallacy in the logic? Do you think God answered their prayers? Yes. Yes. He used the Communist Party to give them bread. So actually it was God who provided. It is not the Communist Party who provided. Ultimately, what did the Communist Party provide? Bread. Where did that bread come from? Wheat. Where did the wheat come from? The soil. Who made the soil? Did the Communist Party make the soil? The seeds for the grains of wheat, did the Communist Party make the seeds? You need water to water the plants, did the Communist Party make the water? It also needs many microbes and bacteria in the soil that will help in the growth of this plant. Did the Communists create that? The oxygen and the air and the light and the heat of the sun, did the Communist Party make that? Without that, it is not possible for a plant to grow. And even after the harvesting, then you have to have fuel because you have to heat up the food and eventually bake it into bread. So where did the fuel come from? They cut wood from the forest. Did the Communists make these trees? So ultimately, it is God who provides everything to everyone. He provides even to the non-devotees, to the animals. Why then will he not provide to the devotees? Lord Krishna is providing even for atheists. One time there was a rich man. He was quite pious by nature. And he had taken a vow that I will not eat on any given day until I have fed at least one hungry person. So every day he would go out of his house and find some hungry person, bring him to his house and feed him. After he had gone satisfied, then this man would eat his food. So this was his practice for many, many years. Usually there was never a problem finding a hungry person. So he would always be able to eat on time. But one day, he could not find any hungry person. So he looked here and there near his house, there was no hungry person. He went to the next door, next street, here and there in the neighborhood, he could not find any hungry person. He waited and waited. Then he decided, well, it's past noon, I'm waiting. Finally, it almost became evening and he went into the town. He was looking for a hungry man, he could not find a hungry man. Finally, he found one. He said, will you come back to my home and I will feed you some food? So he said, all right. So he came back home. And as he sat down and the food was kept in front of him, he noticed that this hungry man did not offer any prayers to God or any customary rituals that you put the water around the plate or just so many things. He didn't do anything of the sort. So the rich man asked him, why didn't you do those activities or say a little prayer? He said, I don't believe in God. So he said, what? You don't believe in God? So the rich man was enraged. So he said to that man, go out of my house. I will not feed you. Go away. I don't mind remaining hungry. But I don't want to feed you because you don't believe in God. Go away from here. So that man went away. He had no choice. So then he had to sleep hungry that night, the rich man. And in the dream, he had a dream. And God appeared to him in a dream. And he said, how are you? He said, I'm hungry. So he said, what happened? He said, well, there was this man who came. But do you know, my Lord, he didn't believe in you. He was an atheist. So I said, I will not feed an atheist. Better I go hungry than feed an atheistic man. She said, oh, I see, he was an atheist. How old was he? Well, he was at least 60 years old, I think. 60 years old. So this rich man was talking to the Lord and he felt that the Lord would be happy with this. He said, my dear Lord, are you not happy that for your sake I am fasting today? I didn't give that person food because he didn't believe in you. He was an atheist. So, of course, you see, when we fast, we are not doing the Lord a favor. When we are doing some service, we are not doing the Lord a favor. The Lord doesn't need our service. The Lord has enough servants in the spiritual world and also in the material world. When we offer food to the Lord, it's not that the Lord is poor and he's hungry. He has enough food in the spiritual world. We need to offer food to the Lord for our purification. We need to serve the Lord for our purification. The Lord doesn't need anything from us. So anyway, then God replied to him and said, look, you're saying this man is over 60 years of age and he's an atheist. I have fed him for 60 years, 3 times a day. And you can't even feed him one day, one meal? So what is the moral of the story? Even though he was an atheist, was God not feeding him? Krishna told that man, I've taken care of him even though he's an atheist. 3 times a day I've fed him. So 60 years into 365 into 3. That many meals I have given him. And you're hesitating to give him even one meal? So though the rich man was thinking that he was the one who was feeding everybody. Actually, it is the Lord who feeds. It is the Lord who maintains. And sometimes, when you don't want to eat also, the Lord will force you to eat. So he will forcibly maintain. There was one man who he also didn't believe in God. So He was having an argument with his friends and his family members, and they said, of course, God is the one who's providing for us. And when he wants, he will get food. When he doesn't want, he won't get food. And if he doesn't want, then you won't be able to even fast, what to speak of eat. He said, no, how can it be? So I'll prove it to you. Today I will fast. So then he went into the forest because he wanted to be away from everybody, so he will fast. He wanted to make a point that he will fast. Now it so happened that there were some dacoits who were in the jungle, and they came across one man who was sitting and eating some food. But the moment he saw the dacoits, he got up and fled. So then the dacoit saw such a nice feast is laid out here, but maybe there's some poison here. This, so look around for somebody. They caught hold of this man. He said, come and sit here and eat. He said, no, but I am fasting, and eat or else. You know, so he had to eat. So although he was determined that I am going to fast, I'll prove that God doesn't exist. What to speak of feeding, you can't even fast without God's will. If Krishna wants you to eat, you will eat. Of course, if Krishna wants us to fast, we will also fast. So it is Krishna, actually, who is maintaining everybody. But somehow or the other, we think that we are maintaining ourselves. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye janah paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. He says, for one who is constantly meditating on me with undeviated attention and who always serves me with love, I will carry what he lacks and preserve what he has. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Yoga and kshema. Yoga means our wants, and kshema means to protect what we have. So it is Krishna who personally provides the things that we lack and protects all that we have. And Krishna personally does it. There is a nice pastime in Chaitanya Leela. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as you know, had many, many wonderful associates, and they were all exalted pure devotees of the Lord. And one of his chief associates was Srivas Thakur. Srivas Thakur was a grihastha, and he had many brothers, four brothers, they were all together, and each had children, and it was quite a big family. So Srivas Thakur never worked for a livelihood. He did not do any business. He did not do a job. Neither even as a brahmana would he travel to different places and teach and get some dakshina or something. Nothing of the sort. So one day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to him and said, look, Srivas Thakur, I have observed that you are here in Navadvip all the time. You don't travel to different places and earn your livelihood. You don't do a job. There's no business. You're not even traveling and teaching and getting some dakshina. So how will you maintain your big family? He said, no, the Lord is maintaining his destiny. If I'm destined to eat, I will eat. So I have no worries on that front. He said, well, then you should take sannyas. He said, no, I can't do that. That also cannot happen unless the destiny is in our favor. I cannot do that as well. But Srivas, you have to do something. How are you going to maintain yourself? Tomorrow the family is going to grow. Your children will have children. And then who is going to maintain everything? So then Srivas Thakur, he said, okay, here is your answer. The answer is 1, 2, 3. He said, what is the meaning of that? What kind of answer is that? 1, 2, 3. Can you please explain what you mean by this? So Shivas Thakur said that, my dear Lord, I will wait for the first meal. If I don't get it, that's one clap. Then I wait for the second meal. If I don't get it, second clap. Wait for the third meal. Even if that doesn't come of its own accord, then I will go to the Ganga and put a stone around my neck, tie a stone around my neck, and then drown in the Ganga. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, such is the staunch faith that Shivas Thakur has, that just by performing devotional service, all his maintenance needs will be taken care of, that his family will be maintained, simply because he is a devotee. Then with a very loud voice, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Shrivas, I declare it here, that even if a day comes when Lakshmi Devi may have to resort to begging, I will make sure that my devotees like you do not come to that situation. They will not have to worry about their maintenance. Simply by performing devotional service, they will be maintained and protected. And then Mahaprabhu chanted the same verse, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye janaha paryupasate tesham nithyabhyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. The 22nd verse of the 9th chapter. Now before we continue with this, we'd like to mention, of course, that we cannot imitate Shivas Thakur. That doesn't mean now that everybody goes away and then says, you know, I'm giving up my job, and why so? I heard in the tobacco temple today, and then who was the speaker, and then there will be trouble for me. They'll say, well, you heard in the lecture that we should give up our job, we should just depend on Krishna for maintenance, and Krishna will maintain, he will give us everything we need. Well, if our faith and devotion are as strong as Shrivas Thakur's, then we can do that. But if we are not on the platform of Shrivas Thakur, then we should do something. The point that Mahaprabhu is trying to make is that you should not be so much Shrivas Thakur rather was trying to make is that we should not be so much obsessed. We're trying to be security, having security in our life and earning more and more and more money, because there is no limit to that. Ultimately, we understand that whatever money we have can be taken away at any instant. Paupers can become millionaires and millionaires can become paupers overnight. So what is the safety? What is the security? There is no security in this world. So Mahaprabhu was explaining that, yes, don't worry, my dear Shivas. I will make sure that henceforth I will carry all that you need personally on my head and see that there is never any shortage in your life. Then he told Sri Nalina Pandit, the brother of Shivas Thakur, that please see that you serve him and his family nicely and ensure that he gets all his requirements. In this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu glorified Shivas Thakur's staunch faith in the process of devotional service. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita also it is said, Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahe Sudrudh Nishchay Krishne Bhakti Koile Sarva Karma Krita Hoye. It is a definition of faith. Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahe. So, Shraddha is that conviction that Krishna Bhakti Koile, that if I simply serve Krishna, Sarva Karma Krita Hoye, all my other purposes will be achieved or accomplished. Because Krishna is the root of all existence. If we satisfy Krishna, then everything else will be satisfied. He will provide for us. So this strong faith may be something very hard to come by. So time and time again in the scriptures we hear assurances by the Lord about how He will maintain us and protect us. There is one story again which is a favorite of mine, and I usually say it everywhere I go. I didn't want to say it on this visit because I say it everywhere. But since the topic is such that I can't help but say it, because it's so relevant here, especially to this verse 9.22 from the Bhagavad Gita. One time there was a Brahmana, and he was very poor, as Brahmanas are supposed to be. And he didn't have a job or a business, because Brahmanas are not supposed to do job or business. They're supposed to only depend on the Lord for their maintenance, so they go out begging. Such was the culture in the days, in the olden days. The Brahmanas would go home to home, and they would get bhiksha. Somebody would some roti, some rice, some vegetables, some grains, some fruit or vegetable, whatever. Bhiksham dehi, they would go like this and get alms. And everybody in every house, they would cook always more than what they needed, because it was the culture that grihastha should first feed somebody else and then they should eat themselves. They should always be guests in the house. Srila Prabhupada used to say that my father every day had at least 4 sadhus he invited. They were of all different sorts and varieties, but he would have them at his house and feed them every day. And there is an injunction in the scriptures, and Prabhupada mentions this in one purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that every grihastha should, before eating, step out of the house, look left and right, and speak out loudly, and ask 3 times, is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? Not that they have to say it softly and then quickly run away inside. But they have to say it loudly, clearly, and wait for a reasonable length of time. Then people are always there who will say, yes, I'm hungry, please come, sir. And feed them nicely some prasadam. And then once they are satisfied and have left, then the family sits and eats. This is the culture. We know stories of Ranti Dev and so many great souls. They all stories are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nowadays, of course, it's hard to do that, especially if you're living in a multi-storied building, 20th floor, and you're looking down and saying, is there anybody hungry? So we have moved a great distance away from the Vedic culture. So anyway, this was part of life. So the Brahmana used to go out every day, collect alms, and he would come back and he and his wife would share whatever food they had got. He was so poor that he hardly had any clothes to wear. He had just one strip of cloth, and his wife also had one cloth. So one day, the Brahmana was sitting and reading, studying Bhagavad Gita, and he came across this verse, 9.22, Ananyas Chintayanto Mam. And he said, read this, Yoga Kshemam Vahami Aham. Krishna is saying that I will personally provide what my devotee lacks, and I will personally protect what my devotee has. Now the Brahmana started to doubt. How is this possible? Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He is sitting in his abode. How will he personally come and give the requirements? He may send his agents, he may arrange for it by his mystic powers. How is it that he will personally come? No, this is an exaggeration. I can't accept this. Lord Krishna cannot personally come and do things. So then he cut out that line with his pen. Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. No, that is not possible. And then it was time for him to go out begging. So he went out. Soon after he went out, then There was a knock on the door. The Brahmani, that is the wife of the Brahmana, she asked, "Who is it?" "Sir, oh, your husband has sent us here." So she slightly opened the door and she saw there were two very beautiful boys. And one of the boys was dark complexioned. He had a complexion of a fresh monsoon cloud. His eyes were like lotus petals. His teeth were white like pearls. And he was wearing a yellow, golden-colored dhoti. And he was looking very, very charming. And his friend was very fair. And he was wearing a blue-colored dhoti. And they were standing there. And I'm sure you have not guessed who these two are. I'm quite positive about it. So they were waiting there. And then, so she asked them, "Yes, so what do you want?" She said, "Your husband has sent us." "So why? And then they pointed out they had two huge baskets and full of all kinds of vegetables and fruits and grains and milk and sugar and everything, all the things wonderful foodstuffs required. She couldn't believe her eyes. She said, "What? My husband has sent this? But every day we just get a little rice, a little chapati, a little sab, that's all we get. I have never seen such a big feast coming to my house like this. Are you sure it's from my house and my husband sent you?" I didn't know he had such high-level contacts. "How did he do this?" He said, "Well, I don't know, but he sent it to us and he told us, go and give this to my wife. So we have come." So she said, "Well, all right, come in. So now that you've brought all these things, you please sit down here and I will cook a nice meal for you." So they said, no, we cannot sit here. We have to run." He said, "Why?" "We are very afraid." "Afraid of what?" "Afraid of your husband." "My husband? He is such a harmless person. He doesn't even harm an ant." So they said, "No, that's what you think." He said, "What do you mean?" "So, well, look at our back." And she saw there were lashes of a whip behind. She said, "What is that? Something that my husband did?" He said, "Yes." "How can that be? My husband is not at all a person like this. He's such a gentle soul. How could he ever do such a thing?" "Well, anyway, you may believe or not believe, but I am going from here. We don't want to see him." So anyway, somehow with great trouble, she persuaded them to stay. So very quickly she cooked some nice meal and she fed them with her own hands. And then they ate very quickly, very sumptuously. They had a nice meal and they washed their hands and mouth and immediately ran away. Shortly after that, the Brahmana came back home. He was looking more, a little demoralized and tired. And then he came back exhausted and told his wife, "I'm sorry, today I could not get anything. No bhiksha, nobody gave me anything today." Then he saw all the things in the house. He said, "What is all this?" He said, "Well, you sent it." "So I sent? What do you mean?" He said, "Yeah, and I know you also beat those two boys." He said, "What on earth are you talking? I never beat anybody." He said, "First of all, you're telling lies, so you're violating the Brahminical rules of not telling the truth, of always telling the truth. And on second, then you beat boys. You're supposed to be non-violent." So by this time, the Brahmana was getting a little bewildered. "So tell me what happened, what exactly happened?" So then she also suspected something's wrong here. So then she explained what had happened. So then when she described, then he asked him, "Describe what those two boys look like." Then she described them. And then the Brahmana actually fainted in devotional ecstasy. And he came to external consciousness. And he said, "Oh, I am so unfortunate. And you are so fortunate because you directly saw in front of you Krishna and Balaram who had come." And I was so unfortunate, I could not see them. Not only did you see them, you spoke to them, you cooked for them, and personally fed them with your own hands. And then he remembered, oh yes, that shloka from the Bhagavad Gita, Ananyas Chintayanto Mam, let me go and see. And then he went to the Bhagavad Gita, and he saw that the line that he had cut out was not there now anymore. So that stroke of the pen had disappeared. It was, everything was normal. In other words, then he realized what had happened. That when he had struck out this line from the Bhagavad Gita, it was actually like striking with a whip on Krishna's body. So Krishna had got that mark which he showed to the Brahmana's wife. And then again the Brahmana collapsed in ecstasy, and he understood the glories of Krishna and reprimanded himself, condemned himself for not having had faith in Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna kept his word and personally maintained and protected the Brahmana. So this verse, he lived up to whatever he has said in this verse. Yesterday I was sitting with Shamik Rishi Prabhu and his son Damodar. And Damodar gave me one CD or a movie of an Indian movie, not Bollywood, don't worry. But it's a devotional movie about one devotee of Lord Ram from South India, whose name was Ramadas. He was from a place called Bhadrachalam. And I tell this story many times as well, and I was very happy to know that a film was made on this. So I was overjoyed to see this. I haven't seen the film, I saw the CD only. One day, hopefully, I will see it. And it's a wonderful story. But I will tell you the one little incident that is pertinent to our topic today. There was this devotee of Ram whose name was Ramadas. And somehow or the other, because of some stroke of fortune, he became employed as the revenue collector of the king in that state. And the king was a Muslim king whose name was Tanish. So he was doing his duty nicely. But as he was a devotee of Lord Ram, he wanted to build a nice temple for Ram. There were some deities, but there was no temple. So then he started putting aside money from the treasury, the income tax and all the tax collections that he was getting, which was supposed to go to the king. He started keeping aside quite a bit of that for the temple. So the king was getting a small portion of what he actually expected to get. So this devotee, Ramdas, then collected a huge amount of money. Of course, he didn't spend a penny for himself. And he built a nice temple for Lord Ram. And he got some nice outfits for them and jewelry and everything. And in those days, the jewelry was pure gold and not like our modern jewelries, which we can't have pure gold for various reasons. So with diamonds and gold and everything. And then once the temple was done, by this time some people who were jealous of this man, they complained to the king. And the king said, what? He has diverted money from the treasury to build temple? So he shall be punished. So he was arrested and brought here. So you have taken away thousands of gold coins. Now you must pay immediately, or I will sentence you to death. So he didn't have any money. What should he do? So he was arrested and he was put in the jail, pending the death sentence. And death sentence would have been, the death would have been executed after a few days. And there in the prison, Ramadas, who was actually a pure devotee of Lord Ram, he wrote a nice long poem. He was very intimate with Lord Ram. Anybody from Andhra Pradesh here? You are from Andhra Pradesh, you also. So you have all heard the story of Bhadrachalam Ramadas, yes? Everybody who has grown up in Andhra Pradesh has heard of Ramadas, of Bhadrachalam. Unfortunately, I do not understand a word of Telugu language. But one Telugu devotee had one time translated a few of these verses for me. And I don't remember all those verses, but some of them go like this, where he is reprimanding Lord Ram. He said, Ram, earlier you had nothing. Now you had a big temple. So who do you think gave money for that? Yeah, earlier you didn't have any nice clothes. Now you had all these beautiful silken embroidered clothes. Did your father Janak Maharaj, Dashrath Maharaj give it to you? No. And what about Sita Devi? She has a nice belt of gold, nice necklace of diamonds. Did her father Janak Maharaj give it as dowry? No. And he went on and on and on, listing all the things that he had done for Lord Ram. This one didn't give you, that one didn't give you. Who gave it? I gave it to you. And how are you repaying me? You're sending me in jail. So he wrote this poem like this, in his bhav of devotion, in his mood of devotion. Then Lord Ram in the temple was thinking, oh, I must do something now. My devotee is caught. So he's saying here, yoga kshemam vaham yaham, personally I will deliver. So then that night was the last night, and the next day morning was supposed to be the execution of this Ramdas. The king was supposed to kill him. So that night, these two effulgent personalities came to that Badshah, the king, Tanish. And they said, we are messengers from Ramadas. He said, yes, we have the money that he took from you, and many times over with interest we are giving you. And the king saw the gold coins. It was many times over the value that Ramdas was supposed to pay back. He said, really, this is all that Ramdas has given? He said, yes, he has arranged for you. So now you please release him immediately. So who are you? I think they said their names were what? Ram something. Ramoji and Lakshmoji, yes. So they said, so he said, what is your name? He said, my name is Ramoji. And what is your name? My name is Lakshmoji. He said, okay. So the king got his money. So he went at night to Ramadas. He said, okay, Ramdas, you're released. Your money has been paid. He said, paid? Yeah, your friends came. My friends? I didn't send anybody. Yes, your friends came, two of them. They looked very big and tall, and they were very stately, royal people. Yes, so what were their names? He said, Ramoji and Lakshmoji. And they paid many times the sum that you owed me. So I am releasing you from prison and you can resume your duties again. So he was astonished and he understood what happened, who had come. That Lord Ram had personally come to rescue him. And then he wrote another poem in which he reprimanded Ram. He said, I went through all these troubles for you. I did this and you put me in jail. And now that you put me in jail, instead of giving me darshan, you gave that Muslim king darshan. What has that Muslim king done? He imprisoned your devotee. He was going to kill your devotee. And you go and give him darshan. And I was sitting in jail expecting to be killed every time. You didn't give me your darshan. So like that. So devotional history is full of such wonderful pastimes of the devotees and the Lord. So here also we see that the Lord personally came and protected them, protected Ramadas. So we should have faith. Of course, we shouldn't expect that we should have the same thing happening to us, that Krishna will come personally. So for us, we should simply have faith that Krishna will protect, Krishna will provide for us. So we should not sacrifice our spiritual life or our Krishna consciousness for the sake of our economic development. No doubt we have to maintain ourselves and the family. We have bills to pay, no doubt. But we must not neglect our sadhana, our Krishna conscious activities because of this. Generally what people do is, they arrange their spiritual life around their material life. In other words, they will do everything on the material platform for economic development, social development, etc., etc. And then whatever time is left, if any is left, they will give it for spiritual life. But it should be the other way around. Our material life should be centered around our spiritual life. First priority should be to our spiritual life. Once we have done our spiritual responsibilities and duties for the day, then we arrange all our other material things. Chanting our rounds, hearing Krishna Katha, having some kirtan in the house. These are very important practices, devotional practices that must be done. We must do it on a daily basis. This is anukula. All these things are anukula. That is how we will get faith enough to surrender and understand that Krishna will protect me. One time Srila Prabhupada was having a discussion here in America with a professor of philosophy. She was a lady. And in the course of the discussion, it came up about the Creator, some topic, that the topic veered around to the Creator. And then she mentioned that she believed in an impersonal Creator. So Prabhupada said, impersonal Creator? What do you mean? So she said, well, a Creator without attributes. So he does not have attributes. So he said, first of all, you are saying he. So he has an attribute. It's a he. And anyway, she said, then Prabhupada explained, look, let's say there is this wonderful bell on the table. So there was a bell on Prabhupada's table. He said, it's such a nice bell, metal bell. And it is so artistically fashioned and designed. So is there no artistic ability required or some creative ability required to make this bell? The artist or the metallurgist who made this obviously had a fine hand. He knew how to craft this bell in such a nice way. So this world also has been created by Krishna. And just look at the exhibition of his artistry everywhere. He has creative ability. The very fact that you agree that he is a creator means that he must have a creative ability. So creative ability is an attribute. So how can you say he has no attributes? He has an artistic talent. So that's an attribute. So the moment you say creator, he cannot be impersonal. He has to have attributes. He has to be a person. So then she said, well, no, I'm just talking from the point of view of emotion, love. He says, emotion, no emotion, just understand with logic. So then the lady said, but I thought bhakti was all about love. He said, no, love will come much later. Initially, it is rational, logical. You must understand logically and rationally who is God, who is the creator, who is Krishna. Then he gave the example. He said, for example, in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami mashuchaha. Abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender unto me. I will protect you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. Now, if I am a new person, why will I surrender to Krishna? Prabhupada said, unless I know who is Krishna, what are Krishna's glories, what is his greatness, how Krishna is so opulent and so full of divine qualities. If I don't know, if I don't have knowledge about Krishna's opulences and glories and his qualities and so on, then why will I feel motivated to surrender to him? So I need knowledge. A logical, rational understanding of God, of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then my surrender will be meaningful. He said, blind surrender will not last, Prabhupada said. A similar point we had considered yesterday, that devotional service without surrender is like drinking water from an unbaked mud pot, earthen pot. So surrender also has to take place on the platform of knowledge. In as much as devotion takes place on the platform of surrender, surrender takes place on the platform of knowledge. So we must have knowledge. We must understand Bhagavad Gita. We must understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Then we will be able to develop that conviction and the faith to surrender. Then when we surrender, we have that faith that Krishna will protect me, Krishna will maintain what I have, what I need. So this is very, very important. Faith, of course, comes in the association of those who are faithful. Faith begets faith. So Krishna is going to give everything that we need. Krishna will maintain me. Krishna has given me what I have today. He can take it away in a jiffy. And he can give it back tenfolds if he wants. Again, another incident which I narrated when I was in Trinidad recently is about a businessman from Jaipur in India. There is a famous Govindadev temple in Jaipur. Originally, the Govindadev deity was in Vrindavan. Like many of the deities, they were shifted out of Vrindavan out of fear of the invasions of the Mughal and other Muslim kings. So Govindadev was then brought to the temple, to the palace of the king, and the temple was made in the palace compound. Until today it is there. And many hundreds and hundreds of people, every morning, they come for Mangalarti Darshan of Govindadev. It is a standard practice for many people. They will not open their shop, they will not begin their business or their day's work till they have taken darshan of Govindadev in the temple. So you will see that sometime before the Mangalarti, the roads around there are all packed with people. Sometime after Mangalarti, they are packed. Then again they are empty till the other rush starts. So this one businessman, he was a devotee of Govindadev, very staunch devotee. He was a wealthy businessman and he had some business, probably it was clothing or whatever it was. And one day he came for the Mangalarti Darshan just a little before, maybe a few minutes before. He was waiting for the Darshan to open, 10-15 minutes remaining. Suddenly one of his employees came running to him and said that our godown has caught fire. The godown contained all his merchandise and millions of rupees of merchandise. Everything that he had was in that godown. And when he reached the godown, he saw that there was such a blazing fire that there was no way he could do anything about it. The fire engines had already been called, and they were going to come shortly, and they came, and they started doing their job. It was such a big fire that buckets of water, nothing would help. So then there was nothing he could do. He couldn't go inside to save any of his goods, neither could he do anything to douse the fire. So he said, why should I miss the Mangalarti Darshan? So he went back to Govindadev temple. Everybody started saying, your godown is in fire, your belongings are getting destroyed, and you're going to Mangalarati. He said, well, look, there's nothing I can do now. Krishna gave me all these goods. Krishna's taking it away. Now, had there been a small fire, had there been some option for me to do something, I would have done it. But since I don't have anything, no choice left for me now to do anything, I leave it to Krishna. He wants to take it away. So he went back, had nice darshan, attended the Mangalarati, came back, and then whatever else had to be done, the formalities. This is faith. Krishna will give, Krishna will take away. He has maintained me so far, he will maintain me in the future. Why should I be worried? Earlier also those goods were not mine. Now also they are not mine. And after the fire, of course they are not mine. The goods, they all belong to Krishna. I am simply his instrument. In this way, we see practical examples of how in our day-to-day life we can understand the hand of God, the hand of Krishna in our life. So we should not be so much anxious about our maintenance. At the same time, we should not be impractical too. We have to do what is necessary. Do the needful. There was one Babaji who was living in Barsana, Radharani's place, many years ago. And there was news about some tiger coming in the jungles around Barsana. So all the sadhus and the villagers living around those areas became a little alarmed because this tiger could come anytime and do anything. So then this one Baba used to carry this little stick like this stick. And they all cautioned him. You know, they said, you know, better not go into the forest because the tiger is somewhere. We don't know where he is. He could come. There's a risk there. He said, no, don't worry. He was carrying the stick. He said, this stick. He said, what will the stick do against a tiger? Such a big stick. And if a tiger comes, are you going to use this to do anything? So he replied, he said, look, life and death is in the hands of Radharani. And if Radharani wants me to be killed by this tiger, then that will happen. If Radharani wants to protect me, she will protect me. Then why this stick? He said, I have to at least show Radharani that I am doing something. I have something. I am using my intelligence as something I have to do. I just can't be lazy and, well, Radharani will protect me. So like that, just because Krishna will maintain me, he has been maintaining me and will maintain me, doesn't mean that I should use that as an excuse to be lazy and say, I will not work for my maintenance. No. So faith is not equal to laziness. It's not an excuse for avoiding our duties and responsibilities in life. So we have to do that. But the point is that we should not become so absorbed in just worldly maintenance and advancement and economic development that we forget or neglect our Krishna conscious duties. So Goptritve Varanam means that Krishna is the one who is actually maintaining every one of us. And the elephant, the devotee, the non-devotee, everyone is being maintained by him. The next principle of surrender is Atmanikshepa. Atmanikshepa means self-surrender. So let's chant the next bhajan. This is a famous bhajan, I'm sure. How many of you have heard this bhajan before? Yes. Again, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sharanagati.
Manas deho geho jo kichu mor arpilo tu apade nanda kishor ma. मानस देह गेह जो किछु मोर अर्पिलो तुआपदे नंद किशोर मा संपदे विपदे जीवन मरणे सम संपदे विपदे जीवन मरणे दाय मम गेला तुआ ओपद बरने दाय मम गेला तुआ ओपद बरने मारो बीरा खोबी जो इच्छा तोहार मारो बीरा खोबी जो इच्छा तोहार नित्य दास प्रति तुवा अधिकार नित्य दास प्रति तुवा अधिकार जन्म भी मोए इच्छा यदि तो जन्म भी मोए इच्छा यदि तो भक्त गृह जनी जन्म हो मोर भक्त गृह जनी जन्म हो मोर कीट जन्म हो यथा तुवा दास कीट जन्म हो यथा तु वदास् बहिर्मुख ब्रह्म जन्मे नहि आश बहिर्मुख ब्रह्म जन्मे नहि आश भुक्ति मुक्ति स्पृहा विहीन जे भक्ता भुक्ति मुक्ति स्पृहा विहीन जे भक्ता लभते टाको संग अनुरक्त लभते टाको संग अनुरक्त जनक जननी दई दईतन जनक जननी दई जनक जननी दईतन प्रभु गुरु पति तुहु सर्वमय प्रभु गुरु पति तुहु सर्वमय भक्ति विनोद कहे सुनो काना भक्ति विनोद कहे सुनो काना राधा नाथ तुह हमार प्राण राधा नाथ तुह हमार प्राण मानस देह गेह जो किछु मोर अर्पिलुं तुवा पदे नंद किशोर मा Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Translation: mind, body, and family, whatever may be mine, I have surrendered at your lotus feet, O youthful son of Nanda. In good fortune or bad, in life or at death, all my difficulties have disappeared by choosing those feet of yours as my only shelter. Slay me or protect me as you wish, for you are the master of your eternal servant. If it is your will that I be born again, then may it be in the home of your devotee. May I be born again even as a worm, so long as I remain your devotee. I have no desire to be born as a Brahma averse to you. I yearn for the company of that devotee who is completely devoid of all desire for worldly enjoyment or liberation. Father, mother, lover, son, lord, preceptor, and husband, you are everything to me. Thakur Bhakti Vinod says, O Kana, please hear me. O Lord of Radha, you are my life and soul. So in this song, Bhakti Vinod Thakur is expressing the feeling of self-surrender. Surrendering one's everything to the Supreme Lord. Now the question may be asked that in general surrender was defined as giving everything for the Lord, mind, body, and words. So why is Atmanikshepa or self-surrender considered one of the items of that? As we have discussed yesterday, there are three stages of surrender: preliminary or initial, then medium or intermediate, and then there is the highest stage of surrender. It is only in the highest stage of surrender that one actually thinks like this, the way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is expressing. And it doesn't mean that till we have reached that stage, there is nothing we can do. If somebody was told, this is the only thing about surrender, that's all you have to do, body, mind, life, everything, then we will think, well, that's impossible for me. So a very practical program of action is given in the scriptures, starting with anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam, etc., etc. So step by step, certain practical methods are also given. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, it is said, and Mahaprabhu quotes this to say, pranair arthair dhiya vacha. First of all, one should try to sacrifice one's life for Krishna and for spreading Krishna consciousness to everyone. If one cannot dedicate and surrender one's life to do that, arthair, one can give a little wealth. Artha means wealth. If one cannot do that, at least one can use one's intelligence to help practicing and preaching Krishna consciousness, helping the movement of Krishna move in this world. And at least we can use our words, dhiya and vacha. Vacha means our words. We can at least speak something about Krishna to those whom we meet. And jare dekho tare kaho Krishna upadesh. So there are different stages like this. So this stage of Atmanikshepa, yes, is a very elevated stage. And when one practices all these different items of surrender, starting from Anukulyasa Sankalpa, gradually this spirit of Atmanikshepa also becomes stronger. Then we actually start feeling, my Lord, yes, actually this is your house. You will remember that in the intermediate stage of surrender, the devotee is saying, I wish to use my house, my family, my car, my money for your service. But in the higher stages of surrender, we say, this is yours. It's not that I am going to use it in your service, it is yours. Everything is yours. My money, my body, my family, my wealth, everything is yours. Manasa deha geha jo kichu mor. So my mind, my body, my family, whatever is mine, is yours, actually. I offer it to your lotus feet. This offering is like offering Ganga water to the Ganga. When you worship Ganga, you stand in the Ganga and then take water from the Ganga, offer back to the Ganga. That is a way of worshiping the Ganga. So like that, whatever we have in this world, it all belongs to Krishna. So we take whatever Krishna has given us and offer it back to him. But what do we do in the process of offering back? We are offering our love. That is a missing element. Let's say that there is a small child. The child asks the father, please give me $10. Why do you want $10? No, for something. I'll tell you later, but I want it. So somehow the father gives $10 to the child. And next day is the father's birthday. And the child buys a toy for $10. And then on the father's birthday, he gifts the toy to the father. This is for your birthday. Now, first and foremost, the money for the gift came from the father. Second of all, the gift is something that the father is never going to use. He is not going to play with the toy. But still the father is very happy when he receives that toy. Why? Because the boy, the child has offered it with love. So therefore that pleases the father. So similarly, whatever we have, our house, money, it's not that Krishna really needs it. It's not that Krishna needs these things to make him happy, no. But when we offer those things that anyway belong to the Lord always, and even do now, and we add that element of love and surrender ourselves saying, I surrender, I give up the false conception that these things are mine. That is real surrender. To give up false conceptions of this world, not physically just giving up things. We may use things physically in Krishna's service, even though we understand it's not ours, but because we know it's Krishna's, we use Krishna's property for Krishna's service. This is called Yukta Vairagya. So in this process of Atmanikshepa, there is the spirit of love. We are doing out of love, surrendering everything to Krishna. Unless there is love, this kind of surrender is not possible. One place Srila Prabhupada also explains the meaning of Atma Nikshepa as me as being that one understands that one is free to desire, but one is completely dependent on the Lord for the fulfillment of those desires. There is no harm in desiring anything, right? Of course, you still have to be careful. Who knows if it's fulfilled, then it might be dangerous. But still, there's no limit to how much you can desire. Someone may say, well, I want the Olympic gold medal. Well, no harm in desiring. Who is to stop you from desiring? I want to be the richest person in the world. Okay, we can desire anything. But if that desire has to be fulfilled, then Krishna has to fulfill it. Simply by my desiring something, it won't happen. Krishna has to fulfill. What to speak of big objectives like becoming the wealthiest person in the world? Even to lift my finger, I can't do it without Krishna's sanction. So in every little and big thing, I am dependent on Krishna. I may desire or not desire, but my helpless dependence on Krishna continues. So this is also the spirit of Atma Nikshepa, self-surrender. Where Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the devotion is there. He says that I don't even want to be born. I mean, I don't even mind being born again. But my only request is I want to be born in the house of a devotee. If you make me Brahma in the next birth, but if that Brahma is not a devotee, then I don't even want that post. I'd rather be a worm in a devotee's home. Now, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's consciousness. This is the spirit of surrender. And finally, we come to Karpanye. Karpanyam comes from the Kripanata. Kripanata literally means smallness or miserliness, but in this context, it's an embellishment, it's a quality that means humility, dainya, feeling oneself very helplessly dependent on the Lord. And as we all know, humility is one of the most important qualities for a devotee. Because one cannot chant the holy names of the Lord constantly, which is the Yuga Dharma, unless one is humble. We all know the Trinadapi Sunichena verse. So it is humility that attracts the attention of the Lord to us. And it is that merciful glance of the Lord then which enables us to chant the holy names properly. Pride has no place in Krishna consciousness. Or even in cultured life, what to speak of devotional life? In any cultured life, pride or arrogance puts off people, isn't it? If you meet somebody who's very egoistic, then you feel very unpleasant. You don't feel nice. So humility also, Krishna also is pleased by genuine humility. But we have to be careful that we don't become proud of our humility. Oh, I am so humble. Oh, I am more humble than the others. So that is pride. It's not humility. One time, one devotee came to Srila Prabhupada and said, he said, Prabhupada, I am the most fallen person in this whole world. Of course, the devotee was not advanced enough to actually make such a statement, you see. If you want to speak something from your heart like this, you have to be really advanced. We may say it for the sake of saying it, but if one has to say it, as we will see in the verse, in the song that we are going to sing now, with Bhaktivinoda Thakur is composed, it is hard for one to feelingly speak these lines that we are going to sing shortly unless one actually feels it. So it was kind of artificial. So Prabhupada understood that. So when this devotee said, Prabhupada, I am the most fallen person in this world, Prabhupada told him, you are not the most anything. You are simply insignificant. And by that he meant every one of us is insignificant. What are we in this world? One little trip in the flight, a little rumbling of the flight, and what happens? Where is our wealth? Where is our pride? Even the most powerful person in the world sitting in a flight where he's out of control, the aircraft, what can you do? Completely helpless. Is there anything you can do? Or you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean in a ship, and there's a huge thunderstorm and the waves are tossing you up and down. What can you do? What are we in this world? We are so insignificant. Just a little thought, a little reflection, little intelligence will make us aware that we are actually insignificant. Prabhupada was not exaggerating when he said that you are insignificant. It's a fact. You look up at the whole universe, the stars, sky, the earth, and what are we? One person. What is the value of this? One individual. Many times you see when people have an argument and it gets a little heated, then one will tell the other, who do you think you are? Yes? People say like that? They argue and they come and one person gets very heated up and he says, who do you think you are? Actually, it's a very deep question. Even he doesn't understand what he's actually saying. He doesn't understand the depth of his own question. He's asking a very philosophical question. It's a very valid question, actually. And the other person will say, I am what I am, but who do you think you are? Yes, indeed. Who are we? 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. That is what we are. If somebody says, don't you know who I am? Yes, you are 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. That's what you are. The Atma, the soul's dimensions are 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. That is what you are. So that is sufficient incentive for humility. That we are completely helpless in this world. We are not as powerful as we think. Any 1 second anything can happen and the bubble can burst. So truly speaking, if anybody is intelligent, he will become humble. If anybody is not humble, that means he is not intelligent. That is why when Krishna lists the 20 factors of knowledge in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the very first thing he says is amanitvam. And then later he says adambhitvam. Freedom from pride, freedom from arrogance. This is a very important qualification for a devotee. And in an extreme stage of devotion, a very advanced stage, the devotee actually prays like we're going to see Bhakti Vinod Thakur praying. The 6 Goswamis used to pray like that. And Mahaprabhu told Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, your humility breaks my heart. I cannot bear to see this humility. So for us, perhaps it's a bit of something that is not in our experience, to experience such deep humility. But it's a fact. The acharyas who are eternal associates of the Lord, they actually display this humility. So even if we can't be as humble as the exalted acharyas, but we should at least try to follow in their footsteps and have this humility in our midst. When we deal with other devotees, when we deal with our family members, and even when we deal with the world at large. So let us sing this last song from the last section, which is a song of Bhakti Vinod Thakur again. Amara jivana sada papirata nahiko punira lesha. Amara jivana sada papirata
nahi ko punyiralesha ma porera udvega diyachi je koto diyachi jivera klesha porera jivera klesha nija sukh lage pape nahi dori दयाहीन स्वार्थ पर पर सुखे दुखी सदा मिथ्या भासी पर दुख सुख करो अशेष कामना हृदि माझे मोर क्रोधि दंभ परायण मद मत्त सदा विषय मोहित हिंसा गर्व विभूषण निद्रालस्य हत सुकार्य विरत अकार्य उद्योगी आमी प्रतिष्ठा लागिया साठ्य आचरण लोभ होते सदा कामी एह न दुर्जन सज्जन वर्जित अपराधी निरंतर शुभ कार्य शून्य सदानर्थ मना नाना दुखे जर जर वार्धक्य एखन उपाय विहीन ताते दिन अकिंचन भक्ति विनोद प्रभुर चरणे करे दुख निवेदन अमर जीवन सदा पापे रत नाही को पुण्य लेश हरे हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
translation. I am an impious sinner and have caused others great anxiety and trouble. I have never hesitated to perform sinful acts for my own enjoyment. Devoid of all compassion, concerned with only my own selfish interests, I am remorseful seeing others happy. I am a perpetual liar, and the misery of others is a source of great pleasure for me. The material desires within the core of my heart are unlimited. I am wrathful, devoted to false pride and arrogance, intoxicated by vanity and bewildered by worldly affairs. Envy and egotism are the ornaments I wear. Ruined by laziness and sleep, I resist all pious deeds. Yet I am very active and enthusiastic to perform wicked acts. For worldly fame and reputation, I engage in the practice of deceitfulness. Thus I am destroyed by my own greed and am always lustful. A vile, wicked man such as this, rejected by godly people, is a constant offender. I am such a person devoid of all good works, forever inclined toward evil, worn out and wasted by various miseries. So you can see that this is not a kind of prayer that an ordinary devotee can chant with real feeling. It's something that can be feelingly said only by somebody who is truly very advanced. But nevertheless, we should aspire for that stage of humility one day where we will understand what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying. In the meanwhile, we cannot artificially imitate Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but we should certainly try to follow in his footsteps and try to cultivate humility in our daily affairs, in our dealings with the world around us, and cultivate it as one of the chief ornaments in our personality. Krishna is attracted not at all by our material abilities and qualities, but he is attracted by our devotional qualities. So the acharyas have explained that the devotional qualities are the ornaments that beautify the devotee in the eyes of Krishna. So if you want to be noticed by Krishna and obtain Krishna's merciful glance, then we must try to cultivate these six factors that have been described here. Number one, anukulyasya sankalpaha, to accept things that are favorable to Krishna consciousness. Number two, pratikulyasya varjanam, to give up those things that are not favorable to Krishna consciousness. Rakshasyati iti vishvaso, to have firm faith that Krishna will surely protect us. Goptritve varanam, to understand firmly that Krishna is the one who is my maintainer and guardian. Atmanikshepa, to try to develop a spirit of self-surrender. And karpanye, to develop a spirit of humility. So these six activities constitute the process of surrender or sharanagati. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you very much for your kind and patient attention for these 3 days. Were it not for an enthusiastic and very attentive audience, it is not possible to speak anything with enthusiasm. But because I see this vast number of sincere devotees here, eager to hear, so somehow I felt inspired to speak a few words. So thank you very much for your good example as devotees. We hope and pray to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, that this community of devotees will grow stronger and stronger, and that you will make the whole of at least New Jersey Krishna conscious. See, many, many nice things going on. Every time I come, there is always more and more development. Now with your new place coming up and so many other new events happening, definitely the future is very bright. So we hope that all of you will participate in a very coordinated, enthusiastic, sincere way to push ahead this mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. And if there are any questions or comments, then please feel free to ask or say yes. Hare Krishna. Okay, the question is that it was said in the class that we should cultivate humility. How is it possible to cultivate humility? The answer is by practicing it. And Krishna will give us ample opportunities to practice. There will not be any shortage of that in life. I think we will not, at least that's one complaint we won't have. There is no lack of opportunities to practice tolerance and humility. Humility means that we will cooperate for the pleasure of Krishna and for the pleasure of the devotees despite anything else. We will never stand on ego. And Prabhupada defines humility in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as not wanting the satisfaction of being honored by others. That is how Prabhupada defines humility. Quite an interesting definition. Amanina, amanitvam, not wanting the satisfaction of being honored by others, or in other words, of getting of obtaining the credit for doing something wonderful or being something wonderful. When we try to take credit for something, that goes against the principle of humility. In this world we see that people generally like to take credit for something that they haven't done and like to blame others for something that we have done. Right? Isn't that the worldly mentality? And since we are on the topic, there's another favorite quote of mine which I share wherever I go. And that, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that it is a quote from one personality, a very famous personality who lived in this country and governed this country. And that is Abraham Lincoln Prabhu. So there is a quote. He may not have been an initiated ISKCON devotee, but this one statement that he made, or I think that he made, is very nice, which I like to repeat everywhere. And I will request you to please also remember this, and if necessary, learn it by heart, even though it's not the Srimad Bhagavatam. There is no limit to the wonderful things that people can do working together if it doesn't matter who gets the credit. Yes? There is no limit to the wonderful things people can do working together if it doesn't matter who gets the credit. It's a very deep statement, very wonderful statement. For all our community efforts, wherever we are all working together, If we all keep this in mind, then imagine what a wonderful situation it will be. It will be Vaikuntha. It will be the spiritual world. One cannot not desire credit unless one is humble. If one is not humble, then one will want to get credit. Even if one has done it, one should not expect it, the credit. Let's say I have done something wonderfully, and I'm expecting, I should be appreciated, glorified, and so on. Even that goes against the principle of humility. It will come of its own accord if it has to come, but not that we will canvass for it or seek it. What then to speak of trying to get credit for something we have not done? So these are some practical things that we can keep in mind when we are doing our day-to-day activities. So what was that quote? Who would like to say it without looking into your notes? Who will say? Please raise your hand. Yes. Very good. Every word was correct. Any one person else? Anyone else? Yes. Yes, little, yeah. Not that if one does not get credit, but it doesn't matter who gets the credit. You see, it may be that, okay, I don't get the credit, but I may say, well, I don't mind if he gets the credit, but he shouldn't get the credit. So it's not just a matter of me not getting the credit. It's a matter of, doesn't matter who gets the credit or who doesn't get the credit. Yes? So that's why this sentence is so nicely worded. There is no limit to the wonderful things people can do working together if it doesn't matter who gets the credit. Actually, even if you say Krishna credit, yes, that people are willing, happily, oh, Krishna credit. But if the next person gets the credit, oh, that's a difficult one. To give the credit to Krishna is easy. But to give it to the next devotee, that is difficult. Why is he getting the credit? Why not me? I have also done so much service. I have done this. So it's natural we feel like that. So the other side of it is that while we don't expect credit, but as devotees, we should appreciate the nice service done by others. We shouldn't think that we have to help him by being humble, by not appreciating his work. No, not like that. We should appreciate even a small thing. If a devotee has done even something small, we should appreciate. Alpaseva bahu kori mane. Ishwarera swabhav alpaseva bahu kore mane. That is what Chaitanya Charitamrita says. Krishna's nature is, even if somebody does something small, Krishna takes it as very big. Some small seva. Ishwarera swabhav na loy bhaktir aparad. He doesn't take any aparad of the Lord, of the devotees, against him. The Lord's nature is that he is so kind that if a devotee commits an offense against him, he neglects it. On the contrary, whatever small service the devotee renders, he accepts it as being very big. So therefore, as devotees also, we should not take seriously if somebody offends us or something. We shouldn't take it seriously. Rather, we should appreciate the good things that others are doing. Oh, this devotee has done such nice seva. It may be a small seva or a big seva. But we should be grateful for that. But if I do something, then I should not canvass for it or expect such a thing. This is the devotee community, how a devotee should actually live amongst each other. Okay? Hare Krishna. Yes. The question is that how would we apply this principle in our work life? If we don't get recognized, then how would we go ahead? Well, the answer is that recognition or lack of it, or the wrong type of recognition, or the right type of recognition, will come or go according to our destiny or karma. So why should we so much strive for it? It's not that we should simply allow ourselves to get exploited. Humility is not a formula for allowing oneself to be exploited. But the devotee understands that nothing happens by chance. Everything is happening under the benign glance of Krishna. So if my success or recognition or anything like that has to happen, it will come. I should perform reasonably whatever endeavors are due. If I'm getting paid for something, then I must be sincere to do that work nicely. I must be faithful to my work to see that I do the work sincerely. And beyond that, we leave it to Krishna. If we don't adopt that, then there is all kinds of political maneuvering. And once we get entangled in that, then our consciousness is spoiled. So we have to protect ourselves from getting entangled in these situations. Yes. Okay, the question is, what is the relationship between Sharanagati and Bhakti? Is it one dependent on the other? And are they simultaneously gone? Sharanagati, as I mentioned earlier, is the fountainhead of Bhakti. True Bhakti cannot happen unless there is Sharanagati or surrender. One may perform some acts of devotional service, but they will not be very sustainable and tasteful. So when devotional service is performed on the platform of surrender, then it can make us rise to the platform of pure love. Therefore, 18.65 is the Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto verse. It talks about pure devotion. And how to obtain that? What is the platform on which that can be obtained is stated in the next verse, 18.66, which is the famous Sarva Dharman Parityajya verse. So, surrender is a platform of bhakti. But it is not that once we start doing bhakti, we forget surrender. No, surrender permeates every act of bhakti. And the more we advance in devotional life on the platform of surrender, the deeper our surrender gets.
Is it also not true that until there's some initial bhakti, initial devotional service, there's no understanding or incentive or impetus for even considering
surrender? Yes, certainly. So as I said, I quoted Prabhupada saying that there must be some knowledge. There must be some understanding on the basis of which we will surrender. There may not be much love at that time. So adau shraddha, that beginning, that little something, that faith is there. Then we hear from devotees, we get some knowledge about Krishna, why we consider him the Supreme Lord, why should we surrender to him, what are the benefits, what is the true situation of this world. So that's why Prabhupada said that blind surrender will not sustain, will not last. So bhakti rests on the platform of surrender, surrender rests on the platform of knowledge. That knowledge or that service may have been done in previous lives as well, and therefore it manifests as a natural faith in this life. But as a general principle, Bhakti, surrender, knowledge. Bahunam janmanamante jnanaman mam prapadyate. Vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. So after many lifetimes of obtaining knowledge, what do we understand? Vasudeva sarvamiti. Krishna Vasudeva is everything. Mam prapadyate. Therefore such a soul surrenders unto me. So knowledge leads to surrender. Surrender leads to pure devotion. Right? Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that we must not neglect Krishna consciousness due to economic development. We should not be obsessed with making money. How do we learn where and when to draw the line? Because we may feel that I may not be able to go to temple, but I'm doing Krishna consciousness at home. I may not be chanting all these, but I am chanting. I want to earn money for my future. How do we draw a line and when?
The question is that how does one draw a line? Yes, economic development, there we do a certain amount that we might justify or rationalize it by saying that, well, I'm chanting, maybe not in beads, but in my mind, and so on and so forth, and I'll try to get more money. The answer is that when we perform devotional service, we don't do it whimsically. We do it according to the instructions of the acharyas. So Srila Prabhupada has given us a certain way of life, a certain formula for practicing devotional service. So we should follow our timetables according to that. Our practice should be according to what Prabhupada has taught us in his books, in his lectures. Then everything will be fine. But the moment we start cutting corners with our spiritual life, you cut and cut and cut and cut and cut till there's hardly anything left. So yes, you may need to cut some corners, but make sure that it's well-rounded enough that you're spiritually strong. And then when we are spiritually strong, issues of material maintenance become solved on their own anyway. Krishna then provides. So we should not compromise in the basic things of our Krishna consciousness. We should do whatever is necessary. These six principles, we should do that as much as we need. So if someone says, well, I'm just chanting in the mind, that is all right, but we should also chant on the beads. There is no restriction on chanting in the mind. We can chant as much as we like in the mind. But chanting the beads, as Prabhupada has asked us to do, we should do. Then rest of the time, yes, we're driving, we're chanting in the mind, no problem. But yes, when you're driving, you shouldn't chant on the beads. Okay? Yes. Yes. So the question is that we spoke about bhakti being on the platform of surrender, surrender being on the platform of knowledge. So the question is that someone may have faith without having knowledge. The answer is that there is knowledge, but it's from a previous life. Faith cannot come without knowledge. Faith cannot come without faith. So that devotee already has some connection with it from the previous life. So there is a natural inclination. Purvabhyasena tenaiva hriyate yavashopi saha. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Purva Abhyasena, because of practice of Krishna consciousness in previous life, there is a natural attraction or a natural initial faith that is there. That is this Adau Shraddha, the initial faith that comes up, a natural inclination towards devotional life. So there is something from a previous life. Or even in this life maybe, some scars are there perhaps, that brings one to the platform of having the natural faith. But if that faith has to be nurtured and sustained, then knowledge must be there. Yes, second question. Okay, question is that in the lecture there was a mention of Gajendra calling out to Krishna for help. So isn't that contrary to the principle of devotion, where now when we cry out for help to Krishna, then we are actually asking Krishna to be our servant? So the answer is that yes, in general, we don't like to trouble Krishna. But in situations of, and this is the commentary of Jiva Goswami and also Vishwanath Chakravarti, they explain that in extreme situations, life-threatening situations, or issues that pertain to our own preservation because of the very nature of this world, if one in desperation, in emergency situations, calls out to the Lord, that is not a fault in one's devotion. Rather, it is an embellishment. It's an ornament. That's surrender. To call out to Krishna in surrender. Because after all, where else will the devotee go for shelter? The devotee has given up all of the shelters anyway. So the only shelter is Krishna. But it's not that we would then trouble Krishna for small things. Oh Krishna, please let me get that iPad. Oh, let me get that latest car. Let me get this, let me get that. No. This would be Mishra Bhakti. Karma Mishra Bhakti. We want something from our bhakti, something material, fruitive. But in an emergency situation, which is almost life-threatening, or even if it's not life-threatening, it's something that is so troublesome, like Draupadi is being disrobed. Dishonor is worse than death for the Kshatriya. In that kind of a situation, to call out to the Lord is not a fault. So the Acharyas explain, that is why the whole Anyabhilashita Shunyam word, this is the reason why instead of Abhilasha, the word Abhilashita is used. Abhilasha means desires. Abhilashita means the nature of desiring. So if you suddenly have a desire that may not be directly connected to Krishna's service, but it arises in an extraordinary emergency situation, then that doesn't conflict with the principle of pure devotion. But if you have the nature, Abhilashita, of constantly asking the Lord for things material, and that is prohibited. That doesn't come under pure devotion. So it need not be always life-threatening, but it could be also something that may cause acute embarrassment sometimes. I quoted this in the lecture, Anyabhilashita Shunya, one time when there was one devotee in Vrindavan, a visiting devotee. You know, when devotees or visitors from outside India come to India, they often have stomach upset, yes? Because of the water or food or everything. So this devotee was walking on the street, on a busy street, and he had an upset stomach and some kind of dysentery or whatever, and he had to go. But there was nowhere to go. And he was getting desperate. There was no toilet, it was a busy road. What can you do? Where will you go? Imagine the embarrassment. Yes? In the middle of a crowded street and there's no public toilet, there's no home where you can go to, just a few shops, and there's no time to run to your place where you're staying because it's a little far away. By the time you get there, you know. So then he cried out to Krishna, Krishna, please help, please help. You see, that certainly wasn't an, you know, it wasn't an act to serve Krishna. Was it an act meant to please Krishna? It was something very mundane, very much bodily. But we have this body, the nature of this material world, our life is that we are caught in this material existence, and self-preservation dictated that. Imagine if there was no control there, then what would have happened? It would have been such a big problem. He said, somehow or the other, then the stomach just held up until he managed to reach his residence. So he asked that, was it against pure devotional service to have called out to Krishna? Of course, we can all have our judgments. But personally, I would take the call and say, it was not a fault. Because it was an extreme situation, an emergency situation. To call out to Krishna in such a situation, even though it is not life-threatening, it's not that kind of an extreme emergency, but still it was some kind of an emergency. So when we do it in extreme, desperate situations, crying out to the Lord, it may actually enhance our bhakti. It will actually be an ornament of our bhakti. That spirit of helpless dependence on the Lord, because it will make us understand that yes, we are helpless actually. We are really dependent on the Lord. So Gajendra did that as a last resort. Then he really surrendered. Initially he was trying, just as Draupadi was trying. Okay, any other question? Yes. Question is, generally, because humility is a quality of the mode of goodness, if somebody is in the mode of goodness, then it's more likely that he will be humble. But in the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance, these qualities are generally not found so much. And one is under the influence of the modes of nature because of one's past karma, the previous life. So what is the solution or the option? The option or the solution is devotional service. By devotional service, everything can happen. Although it is very hard to change the svabhava or the nature. Extremely difficult. Even for devotees, it is difficult. Because the devotional service is not strong enough. But if the devotional service is strong enough, then the svabhavak also can change, like Valmiki or Mrigari. Then the natures will change drastically. So it depends on the strength of our devotional service. If our devotional service is very strong, then yes, even though we may be influenced by the lower modes, we will be able to overcome on the strength of that devotional service. Otherwise, it is not possible. And if a person is in the mode of goodness without being a devotee, and because he's in the mode of goodness, he's humble for now, but he will not remain humble unless he becomes a devotee. Sooner or later, the lower modes will act upon him. He will not be able to sustain himself in the mode of goodness until he takes shelter of devotional service. So humility without devotion will not sustain. And devotion without humility also will take a long time to come. But at least if we are sincere in our devotion and we are trying to be humble, then yes, things will happen. the progress will come and all these bad tendencies will gradually go away. Okay? Any other question? Yes. Okay, so the question is that if there is some significant change in a devotee's life, either in terms of misfortune or good fortune, how much is the contribution of karma and how much is the contribution of Krishna's interference? It depends on the degree of surrender, yes. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam sthathaiva bhajamyaham. To the degree we are surrendered, Krishna will personally intervene in our life. Therefore, for a devotee, there will always be the personal interference of Krishna. But to what degree he manipulates the laws of karma is something that he will use at his own discretion and in his own wisdom, keeping in mind the welfare of the devotee and the devotee's progress in Krishna consciousness. Obviously, Krishna's personal interference will be greater the deeper the surrender of the devotee is. Because we want Krishna to interfere. When we surrender, we are actually asking Krishna, please take charge of my life. So Krishna says, all right, you want me to take charge? I will. And he does. But for a non-devotee, he doesn't want Krishna to take charge of his life. So he says, okay, Maya, you take charge now. So for a devotee who is a sadhaka or a practitioner, not attained perfection, there's a desire to want to surrender, but there's also some hesitation tugging back at his heart. Well, don't surrender too much. Krishna, take charge of my life, but don't take charge of my money, okay? Just leave that aside and you take charge of the rest. You know, you everything else is yours, but please leave this department for me. So there's mixed surrender. So depending on how we come across to Krishna, Krishna will respond. So a devotee who has completely surrendered is in effect telling Krishna, you please completely take over my life. So then Krishna will do whatever he pleases, which will ultimately be for the good of that devotee. Spiritually, it will help that devotee advance. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Yes. Okay, the question is that it was mentioned in the lecture that one should avoid the association of non-devotees. But within ISKCON, isn't it that we want non-devotees to come here? Yes, we want devotees to come and we want even those who are not devotees to come. We want everyone to come and become devotees of Krishna. So, when we are preaching Krishna consciousness, we will meet so many people who are not devotees. So we are giving them the association of Krishna through the means of the message of Krishna that we are delivering. And if those who are not quote-unquote devotees coming to the temple, they are welcome. Because they wouldn't come unless they have some faith or some interest. So they are budding devotees, they want to become, they want to know. So definitely, then the devotees will associate with that person, try to speak about Krishna, try to engage that person in Krishna's service, and so on. But we should not, what is meant by that statement that we shouldn't associate with non-devotees is that we should not try to be so much in their company that we take their association rather than we giving our association to them. So it should not be that instead of giving them Krishna, we take Maya from them. Yes? Association means an exchange. I give something or I receive something. So giving association means that we give Krishna to them. Giving Krishna to them means we give them some faith in Krishna. And taking association from them means we partake of their mentality, of their faith in Maya. So we have to be careful in associating with non-devotees, because if our faith in Krishna is less than their faith in Maya, then we will end up taking their faith. Water from a higher level flows to a lower level. So if our faith in Krishna is stronger than his faith in Maya, then okay, our faith will go to him. So we have to be cautious also at the same time that we don't accept Maya from them. Okay? Yes. The question is that in the question relating to bhakti, surrender and knowledge, now some faith is required even to get that knowledge. So Prabhupada says in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita that at least theoretically one should accept that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how does one understand this? That is the question. The answer is yes. Even to theoretically accept, it needs some faith. Because why would anyone even tolerate such a thing unless he had some faith? There are many people who would never consider such a thing also. I'm sure we've all met people who would never even consider this proposal that Krishna is God. Even theoretically, they'd say, no, I'm not interested. So they don't even have that preliminary faith, that adau shraddha, which is necessary for them to even hear something about Krishna, hear some knowledge. So if there is something from a previous life or from this life in the past, where there is sufficient accumulation of devotional credits called sukriti, devotional sukriti, then that person will be amenable to at least hear something from you about Krishna. Otherwise, he won't even listen. Yes, even a theoretical acceptance of something comes because of some connection in the previous life. And if that person's devotional credits are not sufficient, maybe he theoretically accepts, but then actually he says, no, I just theoretically accepted it now, but I don't think I want to accept this. But if his devotional credits are strong enough, or he meets some very, very wonderful devotees who give that mercy, then maybe that the thing may flower out and the faith will generate. Yes. Okay, so the question is that in the verse Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadyanavritam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Ruttama, it is mentioned that first class devotional service is that which is performed without any ulterior motive and which is not covered by jnana or karma, etc., and which is performed with a favorable attitude. So the question is, what is that jnana that is talked about there, that it is not covered by jnana? The jnana that is being talked about here is knowledge of the impersonal Brahman, knowledge of the Lord as some impersonal force or light or something like that. In other words, we should have the conception that Krishna is a God, Supreme Lord is a person. We shouldn't have the conception that absolute truth is impersonal and that the goal of life is to merge into that impersonal. So this jnana refers to, in this context, in this verse, it refers to that knowledge or that process or that reasoning that ultimately leads us to merge into the impersonal. So our bhakti should not be covered with this kind of a mentality. Okay, so it's quite late now, it's almost 8 o'clock, so I think we should end up here. So thank you very much for your kind and patient attention and your wonderful questions. Shri Shri Gaur Nithai Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.
You showed us something in the book, okay, you showed it. Okay, hope we don't get feedback here. So again, on the third and final day, we'd very, very much like from the bottom of our hearts to thank His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj for coming and giving us this wonderful, wonderful seminar. I'm sure it's touched all of our hearts and we'll all take away something with us and remember something and hopefully apply something in our day-to-day lives. So big three loud Hari Bols for Maharaj. Please. Hari Bol! So with that, we hope, Maharaj, that you can commit to coming back next year. another wonderful seminar. But anyway, we will eagerly anticipate. Also like to thank some devotees, many devotees, unfortunately I don't know them all by name, who came from many, many far places away to attend this seminar. We have Harikesh Prabhu and his family from Utah, I think Naresh Prabhu and some other devotees from Chicago, Yash Prabhu and Mataji from DC, and Pradyumna Prabhu and family from Baltimore. I don't know, maybe some other places too that I don't know, but anyway, we're very honored and happy that you came all this way and attended this seminar. So thank you all so much for coming. Of course, I think all of you will be knowing that next big festival is coming very shortly, in less than a month now. So Janmashtami, I just want to let people know that we will be celebrating on the actual day here itself, August 9th, Thursday. And of course, Prabhupada's appearance on Friday, August 10th. And as with every year, we're looking for various sponsorships for the flowers and the decorations and the prasadam and so many other areas that we need assistance with. This year, instead of the usual Kalash Abhisheks, we have this wonderful Shankh Abhishek. So you can see this beautiful jeweled Shankh that we will be giving to people who can sponsor the Abhishek process. And also we will be distributing these wonderful books, Vrindavan, the Playground of the God. So Playground of God, I should say. So this wonderful book will also be given to the Abhishek sponsors. So anyone who can sponsor or is interested in sponsoring can see any of us, myself, Shyam Kund Prabhu, Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu. Those who don't come and see us, rest assured, we'll be coming to see you soon. So also, in terms of anyone, I forgot to mention the last couple of days, anyone who's interested in sponsoring for this event in any way or form, they can also see us. Okay, and now for today's thanking the devotees who prepared today's feast. So we have a long list of devotees, Devaki Mataji and Radharani Mataji, Maruti Mataji, Shalini Mataji, Nagaraj Prabhu, Purnima Mataji, Radhamohan Prabhu, Ansuya Mataji, Rajesh Om Prabhu, and we probably missed some too. So all those devotees who assisted in cooking today, big Hari Bol for all of you. Thank you. And as with every day, we are requesting that devotees don't take prasad in the temple room, right? So we just maintain the sanctity and helps with the cleanup effort. And we're also requesting some volunteers with cleanup after the program, kitchen and upstairs, sweeping and mopping and so forth. So please try to stay and help us clean up after the program. So thank you all very much for coming. And thank you again, Maharaj. And we can honor Krishna Prasad. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Oh, Maharaj is asking. Maharaj. They're asking if you could do 10 minutes kirtan.
10 minutes kirtan?
Yes. Okay. Oh, if everyone wants to stay, Maharaj has agreed to do 10 minutes of kirtan, so we can just stay for a few minutes of kirtan.
Now, somebody can play?
Hare Krishna. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunrivadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Prabhupad, 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 Jaya Prabhupad. Nitai Gaura Haribol, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribol. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Anita Gora, Hari Bol. Nitai Gaura Haribol, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribol. Gaur Premanande, Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. ISKCON New Jersey Yatra ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Hare Bol. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Namaste Narasringhaya.
Namaste Narasringhaya.
Pralada la da da
da. Pralada
Prahlada.